Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano.
No one is holding a gun to my head to say this, but they are withholding the antidote. Funding for this podcast comes from ebook and paperback sales of A Happy Bureaucracy, the book. Send a warning to your straight-laced and prudish books on your bookcase by adding paperback copies of A Happy Bureaucracy, Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland, and post-apocalyptic pirates. Just head over to my website, mpfitzgerald.art. Once more, that's mpfitzgerald.art. Okay.
Just please spare my family. Please spare my family.
Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland. The Happy Bureaucracy, Book 2, by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are even more gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Also, child endangerment. Did I mention child endangerment? Chapter 3. They had to know that they were coming. There was just no way that a whole town of on-edge men who were expecting the tax army to show up any day now would not have seen the dozens of white vans descend at the mountain. Traveling by motor vehicle kicked up dust in the United Wastes without fail. Add to that, and without hyperbole, an entire mountain's worth of ash, and you got a storm's worth of clouds erupting from the highway. They had to know that they were coming. This was the second dumbest thing Arthur had ever done. Seeing that he tried to do this on foot and with only one other person before, this was a fast improvement, but both times he knew that he was marching toward his death. Unlike last time, however, he now had a cause that was worth fighting for. The tax army had descended the mountain after daybreak, and once more filed themselves in a very organized parking grid once at the base. After a breakfast of powdered eggs and spam, Ralph corralled his assigned troops, rather ineffectively, if you asked Arthur, and sent them out in three vans. This was one van too many, as the dozen agents and one enforcer could have easily piled into two. But Ralph's ego demanded a control van like his hero, Boyd, and so he and Arthur were the exclusive occupants of one van. Arthur would soon learn that the real reason for the split was so that Ralph could plead for Arthur's direction away from the eyes of the rest of his troops. Arthur drove the van with Ralph beside him, the other two vans following obediently behind them. Last time Arthur was here, he had risked his life to fill out a goddamn census. He had thrown himself and Rabia in front of harm's way so that he could do a job. Now? Well, now Arthur had a real purpose, and it filled him with a determination that was foreign to him. Boyd wanted to try and get Arthur out of the way again? Fine. He had asked to be on the front lines anyway. He had only escaped the impossible before so that he could do what he was about to do now, or at least for what he had set in motion. They passed a mangled wreck of steel, rubber, and dried, rotten flesh, the remains of one of the colonel's sled dogs, one of the motorcycles that pulled his obscene throne like a chariot, killed by one of Robbie's pipe bombs. The sight had quieted Ralph. Maybe the reality of the dreadful task at hand was finally sinking in. Arthur looked at it with only a morbid curiosity and an admiration for Robbie's vicious handiwork. Ahead of them was Slaver City, and even from this distance, they could see the walls keeping the slaves prisoners within, and would-be raiders like themselves, out. Seeing the slaves firsthand, seeing the terrors of the city, and experiencing much of it, had drilled a hole into Arthur's heart that could only be filled with their freedom. He had once devoted his life to his office work, and had not once questioned the decisions of his higher-ups. Now he was devoted to the utter destruction of this godforsaken town and the freedom of its prisoners. Oh, he wanted to live, to make it out of this alive. But if he died trying, well, he could not think of a better life spent. Ralph, however, if you're successful, do you think they'll promote us further? I mean, you could probably have my position. But do you think that they would make me upper management? Ralph asked Arthur from the passenger side. Arthur relished the fact that keeping an eye on the road as he drove gave him a valid excuse not to look at the man beside him. I counted 200 men, women, and children that were not sold off at the time of confiscating their accounting book. Real people who have no hope tomorrow. Is another promotion really what we should be talking about right now? Arthur said, his hands clutching the wheel as if it could get away from him. Oh, come on, don't be like that. We can benefit from doing a good thing, can't we? Boyd handpicked us both for this. Surely he has eyes on us for a reason. Oh, you have no idea, Ralph, thought Arthur. The worst part of this journey was that Arthur had agreed to help make Ralph look competent before he could make demands for doing so. Not talking except when necessary would definitely have been one of those demands. I mean, they must be scared of you after what you did to them last time. They'll probably surrender at the sight of us. We'll walk home as heroes, Ralph said as his hands went up in eager showmanship. When Arthur did not immediately answer, Ralph squirmed in his seat. Right? They passed a second mangled corpse of another motorcycle. Arthur adjusted slightly to pass it. The walls of the city grew as they drove closer. No, Ralph, they most certainly will not surrender. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like my last moments on this dead planet to be filled with dignity and not sullied by your petty ignorance and ambitions, Arthur said, surrendering what eye contact he could spare away from the road to make sure that Ralph saw his contempt. Hey, I'm your supervisor, asshole. You can't talk to me like that, Ralph shouted. Why not? What the hell are you going to do, Ralph? File a complaint? If you want to help make sure you survive this and look good doing it instead of being the incompetent ass that you are, while we're alone, you'll fucking deal with it. Arthur was met with stunned silence. He was doing his best to channel Rabia, but without the type of profanities that would make God blink. The veil of niceties and fake politeness that had defined their relationship for their entire working career had just come down like the Berlin Wall. Both men knew that they were not friends, though they acted friendly. But Arthur could tell that Ralph did not know how to proceed now that the obvious was in the open. Without the civil facade to fall back on, the two became silent instead, just like Arthur wanted. The trio of vans continued forward, slowing down only once when they passed Robbia's first pipe bomb victim, a highly modified Volkswagen. They were growing near, yet there was no one to greet them. This worried Arthur the most. He knew of the mutant fleet of cars that Slaver City kept. He knew that they were capable of cutting the vans off now before they got too close. The fact that they hadn't was odd. They had to know that they were coming. They had to. Despite the bad omens, despite knowing that they were headed to their deaths, and despite being fine with dying for a cause, Arthur still found himself fighting down hope. Maybe the slavers had abandoned ship. Maybe they had left town, knowing the reckoning that the federal government was capable of, most especially when it was owed money. Maybe the slavers, against all odds, would cooperate, and things would go exactly like Ralph's naive mind had conjured. He knew that reality would have something abusive to say about this, but that feeling of hope was still there. Hope. It was either his greatest asset or his greatest flaw. Arthur drove on in contemplative quiet. The walls of the city grew in definition with each mile they got closer. When they were finally close enough to see it, Arthur nearly slammed on the brakes in panic, but because he is the responsible driver that he is, he turned his right blinker on and pulled over to the side instead. The other vans followed suit. He saw cars. All of the cars. The entire slaver mutant fleet. But he did not see dust. He did not see exhaust. What's happening? Why are we stopped? Ralph asked with a cracked voice. Are we in danger? Or should I yell at you for insubordination? Those cars, Arthur answered, pointing toward the city. They parked them on the other side of the city within their walls, but they are facing us, and they aren't moving. So? If they were out and lined up like that, I doubt that they are waiting for us before the attack, Arthur said, seeing that Ralph had winced at the word attack. But there is no reason for them to be out like that otherwise. We need to observe them for a minute. Arthur unbuckled his seatbelt and exited the van. Ralph followed. A couple of the other agents were already standing outside of their own vans with eyebrows lifted in puzzlement. The lone enforcer stayed inside. The agents looked expectantly at Ralph, and when he said nothing and failed to take charge, Arthur nudged him in the side with his elbow. Ralph stuttered something incoherent before trying to again. They're doing something weird out there. They shouldn't, have their cars parked like that. We should observe them. Everyone except Arthur pivoted toward the city with their hands shading their eyes and stared at the wall. Arthur let out a sigh of exasperated impatience at the stupidity of the scene he was now beholding. This is what every single one of my enforcers probably felt like around me, he thought, including Rabia. Does anyone have any binoculars or telescopes that we can actually see what they are doing from here? Arthur asked the group. Then, after seeing a look of concern from Ralph, added, Ralph told me to ask. One of the other agents said that he did, and with a new purpose dodged to his van and returned with some binoculars. The men handed them to Ralph, who then handed them to Arthur. They were still too far away for the binoculars to make out much more than the eye couldn't, but the extra definition was enough that he could at least see the orientation of the cars. The cars were not facing them, as was expected. They were stacked up on their sides. Further, Arthur could see that the entrance, normally large enough for several lanes of cars, was now barricaded with the slaver's mutant fleet. They had fortified their wall with the cars. They had not greeted them because the slavers were preparing for a full-on siege. I don't think they are going to be very welcoming, said Arthur, as he passed the binoculars back to the man who had fetched them, then looked on to Ralph for the leadership he did not actually expect. He was not disappointed. Ralph either failed to notice his cue, or failed because he did not know what to do. Either way, Ralph failed. Arthur did his best to step in. They clearly look hostile, sir. Should we call Boyd for reinforcements? Nope, said Ralph. We don't know that for sure. You're probably right, Arthur. But they are citizens, after all. We have to give them the benefit of the doubt. We have to be courageous. Ralph's audience nodded in excitement as Arthur palmed his forehead. Ralph ordered the agents back into their vans and smiled daftly at Arthur as they entered their own. Once inside the van, and once Arthur had meticulously checked his mirrors, tested his blinkers, and buckled his seatbelt, Ralph looked expectantly at Arthur. Well, how'd I do? Good, right? He smiled profusely. No, Ralph, goddammit, that was not good, Arthur replied as he turned back into the road. What? What are you talking about? I was decisive and brave while you were doing your cowardly bit. The men loved it. I wasn't giving you an opportunity to be brave, Ralph. I was giving you an opportunity to do what is smart and make it look like it was your idea. Oh. Yeah. Probably too late to change my mind, then? Ralph asked as he blushed. Yes, Ralph. Not unless you want to look fickle, which is fine by me. I'd rather live, Arthur said as he gazed toward the city he was reluctantly heading to. But you're in charge. Shit. Ralph replied, his eyes growing large as the city neared. Well, I mean, we can call for backup anyway, like behind the others' backs. No, Ralph. Despite the fact that you dubbed this the control van, the radio is with the others. Plus, I don't even have the right form for that. Ralph's nervousness was threatening to spread to Arthur, which was not something he was prepared to deal with on top of his own dread. You know, which form that is, in case we need to radio for help? Ralph asked. Arthur was the poster boy for an efficient bureaucrat. Asking him such a question was insulting. Ralph's oversight in his leadership role annoyed him. He did not attempt to hide that annoyance. "Yes, Ralph, it's Form 1199B, the burgundy one." "Good," Ralph stated more than replied. "Good, we'll, probably need that one soon." Ralph then turned toward Arthur with urgency. "What do we do if they just start shooting at us?" he asked. Arthur looked on at the wall. His fright turned to anger as he looked on and pictured the slaves held inside. He grit his teeth and said, "We shoot back." "When did you become such a badass?" Ralph asked. "I never did," said Arthur. "I'm actually really pathetic. I can't even fire a gun without dropping it. You just suck so hard I look like one in comparison." Ralph flipped him the bird. They were close enough to see the silhouettes of figures standing on top of the wall, and close enough to see even more perched behind the barricade of cars. Arthur slowed down and came to a stop about 200 yards away from the city entrance. The other vans followed his example. He unbuckled his seatbelt and turned to Ralph. "We're here, Ralph. Do we go to talk to them and get killed? Or do we go to the van with a radio and call for help?" Ralph's eyes went wide. "We go and talk?" he asked, instead of ordered. Arthur sighed deeply and fought back his own terror. Suddenly, the idea of dying for a doomed cause seemed foolish. He decided that he would much rather live to see it accomplished. "We go and talk," Ralph stated again with his chin up. It was a poor impersonation of someone being brave. Arthur grabbed his clipboard and adjusted his IRS badge. "Time to go to work," he thought, then stepped outside. The sun was blinding, and for a moment he could not focus on what was in front of him. Once his eyes adjusted and he masked the sun's light with his hand over his brow, Arthur took a reluctant step forward. A week ago he might have marched with purpose, with duty, but he had learned where that got him. It got him captured. Now it would probably get him killed. The agents and the one enforcer from the other vans exited as well. The concussive sound of a bullet rang out into the air by a second step. Half a heartbeat later, the shot was followed by a cacophony of more shots. After hearing the first shot, every single IRS agent did exactly what they had been trained to do when they heard the sound of gunfire during their audits. The mantra was deeply instilled in them. Guns go up, fall down. They did exactly that. They all fell backward to the ground, save for Arthur. Then one started screaming in agony, blood pouring down the man's chest. "Get up!" Arthur shouted and grabbed Ralph by the collar, then turned toward the others as more gunfire rained down at them. "Get up, get up, get up!" he yelled as he ran to the back of the van, looking for cover. The other agents scattered and did the same, except for three, who were now laying in a pool of their own blood. Crimson bloomed across their bleached shirts and caked into the morbid mud on the wasteland dust. Arthur pinned himself to the back of the van with his back to it. His stifled breath came out in a panicked burst. Bullets ricocheted with steel. Arthur turned to Ralph and saw his face was as white as the ashen mountain behind them.
"I'll call for backup," Ralph said.
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice, available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.